You're listening to Brazen Bookworm's Unrighteous Reading Rebellion, a reform book snob's journey and musings through all things romance. Some language may not be safe for all ears. Frequent use of sarcasm may occur.
I'm really excited to have A.M. Johnson, Amanda, here today. One of my, honestly, all-time favorite authors. Not just saying that because you're here with me today. It is the honest truth that I kind of, you know, I stand you hard. Slowly making my way through your entire backlist multiple times. So welcome, Amanda.
Thank you.
Here. And just introduce yourself. Give us a little bit about who you are, what kind of books you write, and all the things.
I am Amanda Johnson. I go by A.M. Johnson for bookish world purposes. I totally am like nervous. So sorry, like my whole brain just like washed away for a second. I'm supposed to be telling you who I am. Okay. I am like, just like, you know, I'm a mom and I'm a nurse and I'm also an author. I started writing and publishing probably, I think it was in, well, I started writing a long time ago, but I started publishing, self-publishing in 2015, and it's been quite the journey. And yeah, I don't know, like, I'm trying to think of what else. Like, I used to be an English major and then I became a nurse, and now I'm just kind of trying to, maybe possibly be a full-time writer and maybe leave healthcare, which would be fabulous after the pandemic. But I get rambly too. See, I'm like, I don't even know what I'm supposed to be talking about.
It's okay. It's all good. That's what we do on here. I think people become accustomed to the brain squirrels that just kind of take off and they go. And I love that this is the thing. You were an English major and then you went into nursing. It's amazing to me. And now you're back to writing. How many people, we go to school, because I did too. I went to college, I got a degree in English, and then I got a degree in teaching, and I taught, and then I completely left everything that had to do with teaching, English. I owned a pet sitting business for 20 years.
Oh, wow.
And I was like, you know, now I'm like, it's like the full circle.
Yeah.
Well, eventually you come back to it, because for me, it's my first love was always reading.
Right. And same.
Exactly. And if you can make a living doing what you really love, doesn't it kind of suck that we go to college so young, and then this wasn't in the plans at all to talk about this, but I told you, brain squirrels, we go to college so young and we're told we have to make a decision about what we're going to do with the rest of our lives.
Right.
And then we figured out when we were in like our 40s and 50s.
Right. I know. I think about that. And I think about like, who I was back then. And I knew I always loved reading and writing, but I think what kind of soured being an English major for me, and not to get off on a brain squirrel either, was just kind of the people who were, and like, not to like talk crap about like English majors, because I'm sure not everybody is this way, but I went to this party and it was like this, like, it was like this dead poets party. And Sylvia Plath is kind of what inspired me to be a writer. I love her work. And so I didn't know who to be. So I just like went as Sylvia Plath, and like, they immediately knew who I was and they were so offended by it. They were just like, oh, you know, like so original, like, you know. And like my professor, he was the head of the department. He was there and he came as Mark Twain. And I wanted to be like, well, how original is that? Like an English professor coming as like Mark Twain, like, could we be more obvious? You know, like, don't make fun of me for being Sylvia Plath, you jerks.
Oh my gosh. No.
So I was just like, yeah. So I like tapped out. And so now, like, it's every once in a while when I'm done writing a book, I think to myself, I wonder what he would think of this work. He would probably say it wasn't real writing or something terrible, you know?
Right. And that's, you know, I talk about this a lot as like part of my journey of becoming a transformed book snob, because I was the same way. You know, I was an English major, mm-hmm. and everything was supposed to be, you know, classical literature, mm-hmm. and the mm-hmm. deep emotional meanings and depths of whatever. But I always strayed towards, you know, I went to college in New Orleans and I focused on storytelling. So
right.
I was always a writer and I did editing, but I was always drawn to the storytelling element of it. But I
right.
pushed myself to focus on the classical literature. And then I became an English teacher and it was the classics. And I was like, no, I don't want to teach them. And that's, I think, how I got soured on it, was this constant bombardment of, if you don't read this and you don't
right.
like that, you're not a real English
Right.
major, English teacher, writer, author, editor,
Reader.
Whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Right. Like, I want to be like, literary fiction. Literary fiction is a genre, and that's a fine genre. Like, I love literary fiction, just like I love women's fiction, and I love thrillers, and I love romance. Like, it's not the end all be all of writing. You know what I'm saying?
I do. And that's why this journey for me has been so amazing, because again, I didn't start reading romance until 2.5 years ago. So you've been writing romance 3 times longer than I've been reading it. And the connections are so much more solid and real and comfortable with what I'm reading now and who I know now than they ever were when I was in college or even teaching, unless I was focused on that storytelling element, which was, you know, New Orleans storytellers are the ones who sit outside the cemeteries in Jackson Square and in Audubon Park. They're not the real English major people. And I was like, but that's not my vibe. So,
And like, I kind of want to say to these people, like, even though they're, you know, romance is what it is now, like, I just wonder, like, if, you know, we continue to, you know, be a world and everything, and like, these books are looked at, you know, several years down the road. Like, I just think, like, you know, Jane Eyre and like that gothic erotic, you know, literature from back in the day, like that, like, I mean, that's like the original enemies to lovers, right? Like,
yes.
So like, whenever anybody talks crap about romance, I was like, and they say, you know, and I used to think, oh, I'd never read romance either until I read Twilight, which is a whole story for another day. But but that's not true, because I have been reading romance my whole life. I've been reading Jane Austen. I've been reading the Bronte sisters. I've been reading, you know, like, it's, we have been. It's just a little different. You know what
You're
I mean?
Right. So it's so true. I mean, even Shakespeare was you know, wrote love stories.
And I mean, you know, they're not like, you know, they're not contemporary or whatever, but, you know, and people write Regency romance and stuff now, but like, we've been reading romance. It's just, it came in a different type of sandwich.
Yes. And they were contemporary when they were written.
Right.
Just not
exactly.
Now.
Right.
But, so that actually kind of leads me into one of my questions is, you know, why and how did you get started writing romance novels?
So, I've always wanted, we, you know, we like romance, right? Like, I've always loved romance, but I never really knew that it's so hard to explain. So like, I never thought that I could write like a full length novel about anything. I loved poetry. You know, excuse me. That is where I started. My roots were always in poetry and, you know, in all that heartache and all that teenage angst and like all that stuff, you know, it all was there. But at the same time, I never wrote poetry like I was supposed to write poetry. I never wrote like rhyme. I mean, I did for like school and stuff, but like my poetry had always been story driven in a sense. Like it was just very free association, prosy sort of poetry. And I thought to myself, you know, I'm telling stories, but they're just really short. Or little pieces of them. And I always wanted to write. And so I had a really good friend of mine. He passed away. He was a 2-year war vet. He did 2 tours in Iraq and he passed away. He killed himself. And it was a very, very like dark time in my life. And so I needed something to sort of find my way out of that. And I also wanted to write something for him and for that sort of, you know, what these vets go through as far as, you know, we, you know, without getting political, we send them over and we bring them back and we don't prepare them for civilian life after they've seen what they've seen. So I wanted to write something about that, but at the same time, I didn't know where to even begin. And I sort of started getting the story. And I thought, I remember I was singing in a car one day and there was this really cute boy like next to me in the car. And he just kind of like laughed. He kind of smiled and like, cause he saw me like jamming out, you know, to like, I think it was a Paramore or something ridiculous. Nice. And like, and so I just thought, what a fun, like, meet cute this could be, you know what I mean, like if somebody meets somebody at a traffic light, at a traffic stop, like all these little moments in our life that we have, how many times did we pass up an opportunity for love or to meet somebody, like all these little, you know, it's kind of like that movie Sliding Doors where you know, you miss the train or you get on the train, and it was sort of, I had that kind of aha moment. And then I decided to write Still Life, which was contemporary romance about an ex-Navy SEAL who kind of leaves the military early, because usually SEALs are in it to win it, right? Yeah. But he gets out pretty early, and he's still in his like late 20s, and he goes back to school, and he comes from a super abusive anyway, I'm sorry. I'll start telling you the whole book and I'm going to stop. That was not
I
the question,
right.
I want to
read it right now. Seals so, are kind of my thing.
So basically the point of the story is Still Life has so much of my life in it. Ooh. Like it's like crazy. Like it, I shouldn't, sorry, it's wild. I'm trying really hard to like delete the word crazy from my vocabulary. It has a lot of my life in it. And so it was sort of like this catharsis that I didn't think I was going to do anything with. And it took me 18 months to write it. And I wrote it. And then I read a book called Flat Out Love by Jessica Park, which is still one of my top five favorite books of all time. And I'd read her story about how she became an independent publisher. Ooh. And I thought, I want to do that. Maybe I can do that. So I did it. And that's kind of how it happened. And I don't know, Rachel Van Dyken and her husband owned a small indie print at the time, and they picked it up. And then that's kind of how it all started.
Wow. And to think that's where it started. And I go back even further than that, where you said your roots are in poetry. And I'm going to say that is so evident to me, because the books I've read, that's one of the things I've always said when I read your books, is that your narrative is so poetic.
Thank you.
And it just, you're welcome. It has this depth. It has multiple layers in it. The language that you use, it's very, I don't want to call it flowery or flowy, because that's not exactly what I'm looking for. It's more that you paint really amazing pictures that go beyond the visual.
Thank you.
And you're welcome.
You could say flowery. I hear I'm purple all the time. It's fine.
You know what? And that's, you know,
I'm purple, damn it. I'm proud and purple.
Excellent. Because I love purple. That's one of my favorite colors. Why it resonates so much with me, because yes, certain elements of language have associations with, you know, rage is red, and there's, you know, sadness and blue, but purple is this vibrant, multiple shades, multiple layers. I don't know many people who don't like purple, to be quite honest with you. So that's a, you know.
I know. I always wondered why purple prose is. I mean, I don't really know if I'm that purpley, but like, I don't. I know like purple is a negative. Purple prose is a negative thing, but I don't think I'm too purple. But like, I definitely think I always try to, like, when people, I try to say it's more. And I don't like to say this because it's like I'm tooting my own horn, because I literally hate myself on a regular basis. But like, lyrical is kind of how I try to explain it, because I think there's negative connotations to the word, you know, purple prose or like flowery and stuff. But I'm sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off. I'm shut up.
No. That's exactly it, though. Is that it's lyrical, and it paints a picture. Like I said, it goes beyond the visual. You know, so anybody can paint a picture of a visual by telling you exactly what something looks like. But your writing goes beyond that. It brings in a lot more clarity of what's happening around it. So that's what's always drawn me in. You know, the first book, I'm gonna go back. Mm-hmm. So Julie Collier is my enabler here. she's my influencer. And I was looking for something to read. I think I had just read I was just getting into MM romance, male-male romance. Mm-hmm. And I had read Samantha Cole and April Wilson, and I said I was looking for something that was not in the romantic suspense genre, but still had that type of emotional depth. And Julie said, oh, well, then you have to read Let There Be Light. And I looked at the description, and at the time I was, this is going to sound horrible, but I'm going to say it anyway. College and like new adult and college was still on the icky factor for me, because those were the kids I was teaching. And I was like, you know, so she's like, okay, so fine. So read Love Always Wild. And I dove in, and it was like, I need the next one. I need the next one. And I think I started reading right as you published Dear Mr. Brody.
Okay.
So I just kept going. And then I read all of those multiple times, because Marcos didn't have his book yet. So I read them all multiple times. And then I was like, all right, I need to read Let There Be Light, because I just had a feeling that it wasn't going to be the angsty, immaturity-based novel that I expected from a new adult novel.
Right.
And fortunately, I was right. It was not the angsty, immaturity-based. It was, deep and beautiful and powerful, and so much more of a story about them than
Right.
how their relationship is, if that makes sense. Because it
Right.
is about their relationship, but it's not.
Like the crisis for them, the black period or whatever they want to call it, and those thing, like I guess there's beats and stuff, but like their drama or their angst or their crisis points were never within them, like their relationship. Like it was more of the outside world and how it affected them as individuals. And so, but their relationship was always solid, like once it began. And so,
Exactly. That's what I loved, and that's what I love in general. I'm real big on the external conflict that affects the characters, but the characters work through it together. You know, I'm not a big angst reader. I do read angst, but I'm not a big angst reader, and that really drew me in, was that it was them against the world type of a thing, them against the others, and it how it solidified their relationship. And I didn't feel you have a beautiful way of writing young characters without making their situations or themselves seem immature.
And I wonder too, like I, 'cause like the thing is I have kids too, you know, and my son is now 16. And so even writing this last book, The Glow Up, 'cause like the sex scenes in Let There Be Light are like so tame. Like they're open door sex. And I knew I had to have open door sex because that's just the way the cookie
It's romance.
crumbles or it's romance, you know what I mean? And so, but at the same time, like when I'm writing about, it depends, it's always depends on the characters for me. Like, Royal and Camden were such young 19, 20-year-olds. Do you know what I mean? They were young. And like they were, you know, they had never been in relationships, you know, sexual relationships before. And so like I couldn't write them being all, you know, saying, I don't know what I'm allowed to say on podcasts, but like I
Whatever
couldn't
you
write,
want, it's
I couldn't write them being all like, I don't, you know what I mean? Like how I would have written like
podcast.
Chance and, you know, Marcos. Like I
Oh,
couldn't
yeah.
even, like, it was funny. Like as I was writing it, I remember my beta readers were like, I was like, I refuse to say the word lube. Like I refuse. And
Right?
it wasn't because I'm above the word lube, but like it just wasn't that kind of book. And when I did use the word lube, it was sort of like a funny joke from somebody like Kai, because Kai would say the word lube, Kai would say the word cock. But like, you know, but like Royal and Camden were not cock speaking folk. Do you know what I mean?
No, I do.
And
And
so
it's funny because it created a more sensual and a more intimate relationship with them,
right. Right.
and
And
which
that's
is
what I was
exactly what
shooting
they
for.
needed.
Right. And I just felt at the time like I hadn't written anybody that young yet in my, and I just was like, I just felt it would have felt gross to make them. Not that there's anything gross about writing like that, because there's are lots of YA books out there. I mean, Chris and Aiden in The Glow Up, they have open door sex and it's way more explicit than Camden and Royals was. It just has to fit the character and it would not have fit them. And I have no idea why I went off on this tangent, but
Because
oh, I
that's
remember.
how
I
this
think what
works.
it was the first time I wrote them, it was like I wanted to make sure that I was staying true to who they were, because it's harder when you have kids of your own, because you can almost kind of put them into that slot. And I don't want to be talking about my kids that way. You know what I mean? So
And
anyway.
you match the characters. You know, characters develop a personality in your head, on the page, whatever they happen to be. But if they're speaking language that's not authentic to who they are, then
Right.
it doesn't create them as the characters that they're meant to be. And I never saw Camden and Royal as the ones who were the explicit dirty talkers. That's just not
No.
who they were. You know,
It
other
wasn't.
characters, sure, but not them. And it
No.
wasn't so much just the age, it was just who they were, how they
Right.
were developing as people, how they came together. And that was, I think, what finally for me broke me of the all new adult is icky. It was the recognition of just finding the new adult that fit the image of the characters I had. And
Right.
Chris and Aiden are very different from Camden and Royal. And I loved them just as much
Oh, yay.
because, oh my God, they are. So, all right. So Camden and Royal are Let There Be Light, which is part of the duet with Seven Shades of You, which is not male male. So
It's
there's
not.
that duet there. And the glow up, Chris and Aiden, is part of it. This is your brand new one. and I want to give it lots of time because I love this book.
Oh, yay.
Oh gosh, the glow up is part of the Shenanigans world, the Shenanigans series, and there's is it eight authors? How many of you are there in this series?
I always want to say eight, but I think there's seven, but then there could be eight, including me. So it's me, Nev, Ryland, Ryland, oh my gosh, Riley, Saxon, N.R. Walker, Louisa, and Eden, and Christina Lee.
Okay. Yep. That's eight.
Is it eight? Okay. Yeah. Then there's eight of us.
Yes.
Yes.
Eight,
and it's the Franklin University. Yep. Shenanigans.
Which I love the FU Shenanigans. there are certain things that when they come across the screen, I just go, giggle.
It's just, I know, it's so silly.
So the Shenanigans series, and I've got all of them on my list. I've only Yay. Read yours so far, but they're all authors that have been on my radar that I really, really want to read. And are they all male?
Yes, they're all male.
Awesome.
And then all the authors that are in this, I don't know if they've ever written MF contemporary before. I think I'm the only one that has a crossover. But I could be making that up, so don't quote me on that. But
yeah, no worries.
Yeah, I am. But yeah, this series is all male.
I love it, and that's mostly what I know you for is mostly your male books, with Let There Be Light and Seven Shades, and then the For Him series, and now the Glow Up. But you do crossover. You do write male female also, right? So
I have in the past. I can't say that I'm kind of a writer who writes what they're in the mood to write.
Sure.
But at the same time, crossing over between male, female to male, I think was more of a permanent thing for me. But I can't say I'll never write a male, female either, because that's not real news. Because I never know. You know what I mean? I might have a story in my head. I have books and books, journal books of stories. But for me, I think if I branch out from MM, it's going to be more in queer romance, because I want to be able to represent all of the rainbow, you know what I mean? Because as
I love
you know, because it's not, it, and I do love male romance. And I think I've always identified with writing males more than I have. And I think that's kind of what led me to write MM, is that I enjoyed writing when I did write my MF books. The story was never, when I started plotting or getting the ideas, it was never because the female character inspired me. It was always the male character inspired me. And I always insert pieces of myself into the male characters, which I thought was interesting, because I feel like I wonder if it's the other way around for people, women who write, you know, MF. I have no idea. So for me, it was always, I was inserting myself into the male characters more than the female characters. So I decided to write MM because I wanted to represent that side of myself, that sort of, you know, fluid sexuality, bisexuality. Mm-hmm. There's so many labels for what it is now. And from when I was a kid, you know, pansexuality, you know, so I wanted to be able to represent that. And at the same time, you know, as a writer, we want to make sure our books sell, right? So we have to kind of, I don't write to market, but I definitely keep market in mind. And So FF is not very popular. And even though I do have plans for FF in the future, I think I'm going to like get my feet wet with a novella first. But my hope is to continue down that, just stay in the queer, the queer fiction sort of queer romance realm.
I love that. And it's an underrepresented genre, you know, just as far as, because there's just not as many people writing it. I don't think there's as many people reading it, but it is definitely one that has gained a lot of traction. In the last couple of years, you know, I've only been reading 2.5 years, but I've done a lot of research. I read a lot of articles and I talk to a lot of people, and because I'm always curious about how did this evolve from that? And how did we get from Fabio on the cover to, you know, the beautiful covers, the illustrated covers now, and the Man Candy covers. And how did we go from just this, you know, this male female kind of bodice ripper to where we are now with male, with erotica, with all of these different genres that come in. You know, let's not even start about tropes and how they influence things also, but just the different subgenres, how they develop more and more. And I think as authors, for me, I see authors becoming more comfortable with who they are, finding their niche and saying, there's another element of what I want to write that now that I know I'm comfortable with how I write and who I am, I'm just going to go for it. And I love seeing that now. So I had no idea there were so many authors who wrote male-male romance.
Yeah, I had no idea. When I wrote Let There Be Light, I had no idea. The only MM that I had read at that point in time, I had read Understatement of the Year by Serena Bowen.
Okay.
And the Him and Us books by Serena Bowen. Mm-hmm. And then a couple others. Like I had read Saxon when she had written her YA. She wrote YA under S.M. James. And I had only read mostly YA, like queer romance, like, you know, like Becky Arbuthnot and, you know, Adam, it's not Adam Levine. Oh, not him. Adam. Oh my gosh. His name just totally.
That's all right. We'll find Silvera. It. It'll come back to us. What is it?
Yeah. Adam. I think it's Adam Silvera. He wrote, they both die okay. at the end. And then David Leviathan, which just really quick, I'm going to throw this out there. If people have not read Two Boys Kissing by David Leviathan, it must be done.
Okay.
Like tomorrow. It needs to be read by tomorrow. Like yesterday. Should have been read yesterday. That's like probably, especially you, because I think you would really love it. It's probably one of the most beautiful pieces of queer literature out there. Everybody needs to read it. Okay. So anyway, so that's what I read. I had never read like, you know, adult MM romance before, except for maybe Serena Bowen. And so that's kind of where, and I just loved, I think I just identified so much with that sort of, that not angst, but that sort of that, you know, not, I mean, I knew who I know who I am. I always have known who I am, but like about my sexuality and stuff. But I think I just identified with the fact that, you know, as I've always in the world that I lived in, I had to keep that quiet. I had to keep that down. Yeah. You know what I mean? And so for me, it was sort of, I always identified with these sort of coming out, coming of age stories, even though I was an older person. And so, So anyway, and so that was sort of my driving force. And I think that's a lot of the driving force for some of these. I mean, I can't put words into these authors' mouths or, you know, assume their sexuality, but part of me wonders if this is like a way of showing that, you know, for some people.
And a lot of awakening, you know, that there's no age limit on when you figure out who you are.
No, there isn't.
And, you know, for us, of course, you know, our age, it was definitely not as accepted or, you know, when we were growing up as the kids today that are the young adults, the new adults now, when we were their age, it was a very, very different world. So even if you felt it, you didn't share it and you definitely didn't write about it.
No.
So it was really, really different. And I love the way this awakening has come about in the romance world also, because I come across very few people who, when I say, you know, it's a male-male romance, they're like, ew. Some people do. I still get that occasionally. I've had a couple where I've posted things and somebody will have to, you know, make the stupid comment about how they could never read that. And I'm like, okay, see you later.
And I get that a lot of signings too, still, unfortunately. Yeah.
Which,
that just happened this weekend.
Are you serious? Okay, so you were just at Allure, which is a brand new event. So what happened?
It happened also at Talk Books too. It was just interesting. So when I had done the first signing I had done since I had started writing Male Mail was Philly, and Philly was awesome. Everybody in like Philly was split up in two sections, and it was kind of funny. Like I can't remember which section was more MM friendly than the other, but for the most part, Philly was awesome. And then I did Talk Books, and Talk Books was awesome too. But at Talk Books, I started to notice a lot of people would come up to my table and they'd be like, you know, how people come to the tables. So they'll be like, tell me what you write. And so, you know, you have to peddle your wares. And so I told, you know, I was like, I write MM you just see their, like the light leave their eyes, or like, they'll be like, I actually had a lady say to me, like, is there anything on this table that isn't two men together? And I was just like, no, I just like lied. And I was like, no, there isn't.
Because I don't want you reading my stuff, because you're
exactly
I don't yeah sorry
you're me and I don't want you reading my stuff, go away.
you don't deserve these books, because
and honestly, like, I plan on writing queer fiction anyway, so it's like, you probably don't want to be my reader anyway, because I'm gonna just keep disappointing you.
And you know, I love that you know who your readers are, and that I'm a big fan of an author knowing who their reader is. And when somebody says that they're not their reader, not getting upset about it, because you'll never convince someone who's not your reader to become your reader. They're
right.
just not going to. Now, saying that, I do have friends who have said, oh, I'll never read MM. I'm just not into it. And then they'll read something that is, and they're like, okay, I wasn't expecting that. So I do like to give people a chance to recognize that. But sometimes people are just not going to be your reader. And when you're at an event like Talkbooks, Philly, Allure, when you're coming to Charm City next year, you know, you want to focus your efforts on the people who are going to become your readers and the people who are already your readers, because ultimately, when you're writing stories that you identify with, they're the ones who are going to identify with what you're writing.
Right.
And they're the ones who are going to continue to support and promote. And now, because of the glow up for me, okay, here comes another brain squirrel. You have introduced me to another whole set of male authors I haven't read yet.
Mm-hmm.
And so not only am I your reader, but now I'm going to be their reader too, because of this collaboration that you did. And for me as a reader, I love when an author that I already love either writes with someone else, recommends someone else, works within the world of, because that already tells me that that is a book, a series, an author that I am going to, that's going to resonate with me because of that connection. So, what was it like writing in the shared world? Because is this the first time you've done like a shared world collaboration?
Yes.
So
I was
what
actually,
was it like?
I was really nervous because Saxon and Riley both asked me to do it, and I'm friends with them, but I just felt like it was really lovely of them to put that faith on me, because out of all the authors there, I'm a little bit newer to the MRM genre, and so my reader base isn't as big as theirs. So I was really grateful that they, you know, took a chance on, you know, on me. But it was really cool, and it was also very hard because I was in the middle of a move, that was Forever Connemore. See, my life was like all blended. My life was kind of like crazy for the last year. So that part was kind of hard, but being in a shared world where I'm so used to crafting the way I craft, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And so it really wasn't hard in the sense of like, we didn't really have to like worry too much about things, but at the same time we did. So we had this like spreadsheet with all the world building stuff and like what, you know, what are the businesses around the school? Like how far of a walk is it? And like, we had to like think of all these things because, you know, we didn't want our characters doing things that didn't make sense in a world that somebody else had already did, you know? So like most of our guys lived in this place called Liberty Court, which was like a shared housing district on campus, but then some of the guys didn't. And then, you know, and then there was like this coffee shop and there's all these things in the bar itself, shenanigans. And so it was kind of interesting because, and we also had to like try to get as many of everybody else's characters in our book as we could.
Mm-hmm.
And that be kind for me, it was a little hard because one of my guys had no friends. He was this sort of loner study guy. So like, it was hard for me to incorporate anybody into his world, you know? So I always had to rely on Chris, and I felt bad for my other authors because they'd be like, well, maybe Aiden, you know, could be here at this place. And I was like, oh no, Aiden wouldn't be there. I was like, nope. I was like, Aiden would not be there. I was like, if you want to put Aiden in your book, it's going to have to be like either in the library or like they're just walking, you know, or like, and maybe in a classroom setting, you know, they ask him to borrow a pencil or something.
I just had a total snort laugh because I was like thinking about this, you know, oh, if we saw Aiden here, and I'm like, nope,
that's not going to work.
And
there's a couple of times I had to tell them that. And then like so then everybody started using Chris, but then they knew he lived in the Stoner house. So there's a couple of times the authors would be like, mention him smoking pot. And I was like, nope, mm-hmm. he doesn't smoke pot.
Nope.
I was like, he eats edibles or whatever.
And right.
Like, oh, okay. So I felt so bad because like, of course I had to pick, like, I had to write these like characters that are impossible to write into everybody else's stories. But then like, really you didn't, like the main goal was we had to set up the story for the people directly after us. So like N.R. Walker's book is after mine, Learning Curve. So I had to mention her guys a couple more often than I would have. And so Vincent was Aiden's tutor, and Vincent is her MC. And then Kobe is the other MC. And I had mentioned, I think they're at the party at the Halloween party, and I think Aiden like looks at a like he walks up and he sees Drew and some girl looking at a picture on the phone, and he's like, "Oh, is that my tutor with some guy?" And he's like, "Oh, I don't like he mentioned something that happens in the learning curve, and so that was kind of hard to do because you know you it's your characters, but they're not your characters, and it's like it was weird, but it was fun at the same time because it was just like it was like this puzzle that you had to figure out how to do, you know."
But I love that because it gives you a chance to kind of stretch your writing talents a little bit, build up your chops a little bit as far as incorporating things that maybe get thrown at you, or finding that ability to stick true to your characters by saying, no, I'm not going to rewrite Aiden as a social butterfly so that he can be used somewhere else. But we're going to work together to figure out, okay, if you really want to include Aiden, where would he be? When would they see him? The tutor, the library, whatever it happened to be at the bar, but being able to stick true to what you're writing while you're working with an entire other group of people. I think sometimes we can get really comfortable in our situations of writing and reading and giving something, throwing something at us that says, nope, you got to branch out a little bit here. Gives you a chance to grow, gives you a chance to expand on what you do and how you see things. Would you do it again? Would you do another shared world like that?
Oh, for sure. I think it helps that I had read all these authors before. The only author I hadn't read was N.R. Walker, which I found out was a travesty because she's amazing, and I wish I would. I'm like slowly making my way through her backlist right now because she's fabulous. But I would totally would. My biggest thing I think that messed me up, not messed me up, but like made it a little harder for me is that I think all people go through this, whether you're an author or not, especially women. We suffer from comparisonitis. And so I was just so nervous because my writing style, is my writing style. And like these ladies write these like really fun, like sort of bantery, like Eden Finley is like so bantery and funny, and like Saxon's the same way. And Riley's really good at banter, even though she's really good at angst too. And like, Nev, I don't know if you haven't read Nev Campbell, or not Nev Campbell. Oh my God, I'm thinking about freaking Party of Five or whatever the hell. Not Nev Campbell, Nev Wilder.
Wilder,
Jeez. Sorry. She's phenomenal at all of the things. And so she's super good. I don't even like to call her books smutty because even though they are smutty, like she is so good at writing emotionally driven explicit sex. Like I don't even know how she does it, but she does. Like,
Okay, I got it. She just bumped way up on my list because
like
always looking for that.
Want Me is the first thing I read by her, and it just sort of at first I remember I was reading it and it was like super, super explicit, like right out the gate. And I was like, oh, okay, it's gonna be one of those books, right? No, like it's so good, like it's so phenomenal. And how she character builds and her language is so good. But man, can that woman drop a smut bomb like nobody? Like, woo!
Sweet. Okay.
She's like, yeah. So I was just really nervous being writing up against all these authors where I'm just all like, oh, look, they're holding hands. So I was like, oh my God, people are going to be like, who is this lady? This lady is so lame. Where's the
No. Plenty of
penises?
them in the series, plenty of them in the story, but some of them are a little bit more emotional than others, that's all. But that's, I think that's an interesting thing for me, knowing that within that the shenanigans world is that there's an ebb and flow to that too. And I think as a reader, for me, if everything in a series or within a concept or a world is the same, it gets a little, I don't want to say boring because that's not really what it is, but it is kind of it gets kind of like an, okay, I've read three of these, they're all the same, I got to go find something else to read. So when you have things within a shared world like that that have an ebb and flow of the style, the writing style, the content, the tropes that are used. I mean, if everything was enemies to lovers, I'd be like, okay,
You'd
and I
get old.
love enemies to lovers, but I also like brother's best friend when it's done right. Or I don't know, Chance Encounter or whatever it happens to be. I love all of that. So I don't want to read just that. So within that world, having books that have different tone and texture is really important to me as a reader. Because if I'm going to binge read the series, The World, which is what I'm going to do. I'm going to sit down and just go, you know, through all of them when they're all out, because I love a good, you know, deep dive binge read. I want that variety in there, and having all those different authors with all of those different voices, with all of the different techniques and the elements, that's to me the best part of having that type of shared world versus a single author series, is that roller coaster of all the things.
Right. You get to hit different notes with each book.
Yep. And as much as I love roller coasters that are going to spin me around, turn me upside down, and put me through a corkscrew, I love a good old-fashioned wooden roller coaster that's going to give me major airtime. So that's kind of how I look at books too.
Right.
At least I would still love those things if they didn't, you know, God, I'm old. I can now I watch the kids on the roller coasters that I used to ride on.
Yeah, I can't do roller coasters either
but
anymore. I used to love them. They make me sick now.
yes, vertigo just. Vertigo is a sucky, sucky thing. So is
Really
eight, but it's okay. It beats the alternative. But so, so what's the most difficult thing for you in general writing a story? So understand how that worked in with the world of having to pull things together. But when you're writing something just within your own world, whether it's for him or something brand new, what's the most difficult thing for you about writing that new story?
For me, it's getting started because I have the idea and I have the characters, and I have these little journals that I write in, and I write like each character gets a page of who they are and what they are and like where they come from, and down to things like their favorite color and their favorite food and their birthday, and like they're like they become these like people on paper. And so for me, it's just starting that first, like the first chapter, because the first chapter is so important, and like it's hard to get out of my own way. So like there's like all these like rules for writing, right, that we learn as, you know, as English people and majors or whatever. And like, you know, and I've read Stephen King's like book on writing,
On
and
writing,
so yeah, so like, you know, there's these things that, you know, you're not supposed to do, but then at the same time it's like, but what if I want to do that thing?
Oh, there
But
goes
what if I want
Maggie.
to do that thing? Is it okay to
Right.
do that thing? Like starting, like
Yes.
one of my favorite books is oh gosh, my brain, it's, I can't think of the name of the book right now
That's
because
okay.
my brain, but like Virginia Woolf starts off the book, and it's chapter one starts with a sentence, and it's like my favorite first sentence of all time. And she says, you know, so and so says Mrs. Dalloway will grab the flowers or whatever. It's been a minute since I'd have to find that book somewhere on my bookshelf. But I thought it was so fun because she sort of, it's like her, you know, she's bucking the establishment, because you're never supposed to start chapter one with dialogue. Like that's like a no-no, right? But sometimes that's the only way that you can do it. And then what sucks is like when you're trying to start it and you're thinking in your head, how can I get around it? It can block you to a point where you're just sitting there staring at a blank page for an hour because you're like, ugh. Or like that first paragraph of every. So for me, when I'm writing, the things that I find the hardest to do are the first paragraph of the chapter. Always. It's like, I'm always like, okay, how can I start this from the next one? And then I feel like the ending too, you want it to be a hook too, to some extent, right? It needs to be able to turn the page. And I don't have as much hard of time with those, but for me, that's the hardest part of my process, is just starting the freaking chapter and getting out of my own way.
And you know, I think it is harder for those of us who have gone through the indoctrination of the degree
Right.
of, you know, you don't start a sentence with and, but, or or.
Right.
And I'm like, I tell my authors all the time when I'm editing, we're just going to forget that those rules exist because you're not writing a technical paper. You're
Right.
writing a work of fiction, and it needs to flow the way your characters would think and speak and the way we talk and listen. And that authenticity of voice, of
Right.
how someone would say something. And, you know, not everybody speaks in perfect tense and structure.
Right.
You know, it's very hard to hear commas and dialogue.
Right.
It's very hard to decide. I end sentences with prepositions all the damn time.
I know, and that's one that always gets me too. I'm like, am I allowed to end this in a preposition? And like when it comes to dialogue, I don't generally care. Like all bets are off in dialogue as far as I'm concerned, because people don't speak proper English. I'm sorry, we just don't. And then one of the things that I do too that drives my editor crazy is I love me a run-on sentence when I have an anxious character. So like when I have an anxious character, I do it on purpose because it's like that's how I think in my brain. And if I, I want to write a sentence, even though I know for a fact there should probably be like five periods in that paragraph, I'm not going to do it. And I refuse because because I want the reader to feel short of breath when they're reading. I
Oh
want
my
the
God, I
reader,
love that.
you know what I mean? I want the reader to feel short of breath. I want the reader to feel that anxiety just like the characters is. Do you know what I'm saying?
Oh
So
yeah.
sometimes I really do just have run-on sentences,
I
but for the most part, they're purpose, for the most part, they're purposeful,
Yes. And I do love that when I read something like that, whether it's something that you've written or there's an author I'm working at now who's uses a lot of commas, and I'm like, okay, we're gonna take all these out. And they're like, but my commas. And I'm like, no. You don't need them there because you're trying to create pace and you're trying to create this sense of anxiety and word vomit and just this character just going blah, 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 and it's all on the page. We're not putting commas in there because it impedes the flow of the tone that you're trying to set. It creates this like a dam, like a beaver dam of how everything flows. So these conventions of where you use this, where you use that. Somebody told me the other day that their past editor told them they weren't allowed to use any exclamation points.
Yeah, I was told that too.
And I went, I don't think you should use 1,000 of them, but if somebody's yelling at someone else and you put a period at the end, that's going to cause some massive reader confusion for me because I'm like, wait a minute, they're angry, like throwing shit at the walls angry, and they're just going to go, they're going to put a period at the end of that. That doesn't resonate with me.
What I was
So yeah.
just fun, like, sorry, not to like,
No, go for it.
the So what my what back in the day, and I still do it because this is what I was taught, but sometimes it's very rare for you to ever find an exclamation point in my books just because it was like, it was indoctrinated into me. But instead of using an exclamation point, you're supposed to use italics is what I was told.
Yes.
But
And
that
I've
doesn't always
seen that
work.
too. It doesn't.
It
It's because
doesn't.
now italics are also used for, inner thought during
Inner thought.
conversation. I've seen people use italics for texts to set apart text because texting has become a big part of the writing,
Which
in
I think is fun.
contemporary stuff, which is great. But
My favorite thing to write.
yeah, it's some of my absolute favorite passages in books I've read recently have been text conversations. Because the opportunity for expressing yourself, this community, the silent communication, but communicating so much, misunderstandings, all these different things can be woven together. Plus, it's part of our lives. We, if you call me on the phone, the first thing I'm going to say is, okay, who's sick? Were you in a car wreck? Why are you calling me? Who died?
Who
You better
died?
text me otherwise and prepare me in advance before you even call me. But it is such a part of our lives that I miss it when I think it should be in a book and it's not. Because it's part of dialogue now and it moves the plot. It gives us more info into the characters.
And I think
So
it
I.
makes us braver in some ways. Like I
Yeah.
feel like things that we could say, especially in a romantic relationship, like I could never say some of the, I feel like some people could never say, some of the things that they would really want to say, but it's much easier to say it via text than it is
Yes.
in person. You know what I mean? So I
Yes.
think it makes the characters braver, but sorry, continue. I feel like I keep interrupting you.
Oh no. That's why
Okay.
that is literally why I asked you to come on here was to talk about the things that you do and how you do them and why you do them, because that part of the process fascinates me of, I've seen, and I'm going to stick on this texting brain scroll for a couple seconds more because
Oh,
I've
for sure.
seen them used so differently depending on who the author is and what the intent is. Texting conversations have been used, I've seen recently a lot between characters that are not the main characters, but to forward what's happening with the main characters as the side characters have to do with them, if that makes sense.
Yeah, like
Like,
best friends talking to each other about,
right. Exactly. Best friends talking, siblings talking to the male main characters, the female main character siblings talking to the male main character's best friend, to plot to get them together type of thing is that's not a phone conversation they might have. You're not going to see them in general without the main characters, but this little text interlude, and then somehow it accidentally gets sent to one of the main characters that they didn't realize was in the conversation, and the hijinks that happen. And then, like you said, there's this element of the text conversation between main characters that allows them to be more honest.
Right.
And once you send the text, it's sent.
Exactly. It's sent. Exactly. It's like there's no getting it back unless you're on Facebook.
Right. You're not
but
getting
yeah,
this
like,
text back. So go ahead. Sorry.
No, I love, and I'm probably going to slaughter this word. I've always loved epistolatory romances. So
Okay.
like those are like kind of my favorite, like where like the letter writing kind of things. Now,
Yes.
granted, we don't really write letters anymore, but like, but those are just some of my favorite things because of the fact that the language we use in the written word is different than the way we would speak in real life, you know? And so
It is.
I just love, I think there's something very, very romantic about that. And
Yeah.
that's kind of why I loved writing a big majority of the For Him series. And so, but yeah, I just think, I don't know, there's just something to be said about letter writing or text messaging that's just, it's fun, you know?
Well, and putting it in writing makes it permanent.
Right.
And there is a different level of acceptance when somebody puts something in permanent, like they put it in writing, where you're not going to say, oh, well, they were just saying that for whatever, or did they really say that, where you question whether they said it. It's there. And I think we do tend to put a lot of emotion into writing more than we realize we do with the words that we choose, how we choose to say things in writing, because okay, other than the times when I'm sending a text and I'm in a rush and my phone decides to send something completely different from what I intended. Did you ever
Right.
notice that there's no autocorrect for autocorrect?
That's true, huh?
Right. So, but when I write something that I'm going to send, I read it over again multiple times to make sure that, the
The
best way
tone
to
is
be
right, or
right, to be the best way to be misunderstood is to put something in a text or an
right.
email, because you can't convey certain tone. But you have to if you want to get across what you really want to say. So then we become even more creative with how we say things to get across
Correct.
what we really want to say.
Correct.
So I love that element. So
Same.
talking about the conventions and everything of, now we're using text and the to take place of letters. Oh, and I was going to tell you this before. So we were talking about conventions of you can't use a preposition to end
Oh
a
yeah, so
sentence.
sorry.
Just
Yeah.
no. Please, this is my life. But it reminded me of one of my favorite jokes was, this is so bad, but it's so funny to me. Two women get on an airplane, and one a high society woman from New York and a Southern belle sit next to each other on an airplane. And the Southern belle looks at the high society New York woman and says, "So where are y'all from?" And the high society New York woman says, "Somewhere where we don't end sentences with a preposition." And the
Oh
Southern belle thinks for a second and she says, "So where are y'all from, bitch?"
God. That is the funniest thing I've ever
So that has always stuck with me. It's so
Oh,
bad, but it's so good.
that is hysterical. I'm totally gonna use that. I love
There you go. So
Oh
every
my
now and
gosh.
then, yeah. Yeah. Don't want to end, you don't want me to end my sentence with a preposition? All right.
All
Here we
right.
go.
That's so perfect. That's what I'm gonna do from now on. Whenever I can't figure out how to end my sentence, I'm just gonna put bitch at the end of
There
it.
you go.
Oh my gosh.
Okay, that winds up in a book. I am going to, I have to, I'm gonna, that's gonna be a snort laugh for sure through my nose. But
Have to
so
dedicate it to
that I would laugh so hard I'd be ever forever in your debt. So talking about publishing and writing the next book and everything, where are you going next? What's next?
I have been fighting with myself about this for too long. I need to get on back on the horse. So I've decided. So I hate the marketing side of writing. It drives me, I don't love it, and it blocks me sometimes because I'm like, I want to do the right thing for my career, right? But at the same time, I want to write what I want to write. Gosh, dang it. And so I have these two books that I have been debating on what to do. And the smart thing, and there's a smart way, and then there's the way that is just do what you want to do. So, but after thinking about it for a long period of time, I have a series that I want to write. It's going to be called the Hemlock Harbor series. And it is a spin-off of For Him. And I'm actually trying to make it to where all my series is, that's not a word, Amanda. Series. Oh my gosh, it's time. All my books are connected in some sort of way, like, Six Degrees of Wilder Wells. And so, basically, so Nora from Not So Sincerely Yours, Nora was one of the agents that worked with Anders. When she the at the end of the book, she leaves because her dad is dying of, or has stage four cancer, and so she leaves to go back to Washington. So Hemlock Harbor is a tiny town that I made up north of Seattle, and the first book, which I don't know if I've released the title yet, I can't remember if I have, but just in case I haven't, I'm not going to say it.
Don't say
The first I won't say it. The first book is her brother's book. So her brother is Luca, and he is a photographer, and he sort of hated this small town and wanted to get out, and so he moved to LA to be a photographer, and his best friend Rook stayed in Hemlock Harbor to be a midwife, but I guess they're called mid-husbands when they're men.
I guess so.
So I don't know if that's a real, like, I need to actually research that, because I need to not like call him mid-husband and that not be a real thing. So because
You
I
can
don't think
coin
I've
a
ever
phrase.
I think I know I think it really is called mid-husbandry or something like that. But anyway, the point of the story is that this entire series is going to be best friends to lovers, but it's going to be a little bit heavier than the For Him series in the sense that I don't really like. So for me, like, angst doesn't always mean will they or won't they? You know what I mean? Like, are they driving each other crazy today? Like, I don't particularly like to read a book that makes me want to throw my Kindle. I don't like to feel angry when I'm reading, and I don't like to feel annoyed. So there's a difference between anxious and annoyed. And so I feel like push and pull can be written in a way that doesn't make you want to kill people. So I feel like when I say this is going to be an angstier series, I say that with caution, because it's not going to be like throw your Kindle angst. It's going to be just like, so for example, so Luca leaves and he has to come back because his dad is dying. And his friend, him and his friend Rook have not kept in, they were in touch for a little bit, but they just sort of parted ways. And so, but they have this like relationship of where they have, like, Luca's always kind of, been in love with Rook, but Rook's sexuality is like, we don't really know what his sexuality is. He's never really said, but he will be my first ace character. But like, he's gonna be more like Demi, sort of like he's not like, and that's another thing too, like the ace spectrum is so big, and I want to like make sure that he's more like, anyway, and he's more Demi than he is anything else. But anyway, that's the part of the story. And
I
so
love
that's gonna
that.
be,
I love
I go off on, this
that.
is why I always don't do well at signings, because people come up to me like, tell me about your book, and I'm like, okay, and then I'll like start rambling and I get all nervous. But so the first book basically is going to be Rook and Luca's story. And their story, like, it will be more like, will they or won't they? But it'll be not in an annoying, like, you want to shake them type thing. And plus, Luca, like, went through some stuff in LA. So I feel like my angst is based on, like, other, like, external sort of things. But anyway, so that's them. And then the second book, so Ron was in The Glow Up. He is the security guard. And he,
Yay.
And he leaves. He tells Aiden that he's going back home to Hemlock Harbor because his friend owns a security firm, and he's going to go help him with that. And him and his friend will do that. And so that's another best friends to lovers. And his friend and him served in the Marines together. And then the third book, I have an idea about, but I'm not quite sure how I want to do it. I don't know if I want to do this or not. But I'm debating it. There's a book I wrote called Sacred Heart, and one of the kiddos, like one of the characters in that book, I might make the third book is, and I haven't decided if I want to do that yet, but I might.
Okay.
I really want to do it, but I'm afraid it will be like, I don't know. We'll see. But the point of the story is there will also be an FF novella in that series as well for Nora, because Nora was bi.
I love that.
So
Wow.
yeah. So that's what I'm working on, I think, next. The other option was a hockey book that goes part of my rule book collection, but it would have
Okay.
been so my MF book, Breakaway, it was part of this collection that I had planned on doing. It was going to be a four book hockey series. I wrote it back in 2017, I think, and I wanted each book to be a complete standalone novel. Like you do not have like complete like they're not interconnected, nothing. Like each book was going to be about a different character from a different team. But then of course my side characters like to drive me crazy. And so my side character's always like, no, listen, I need you to listen to my idea. And I'm like, okay, talk to me. So Bryson was the captain of Mark's team in Breakaway. And he, I'm sorry, I'm trying to be fast. So
No, you're fine.
His book would be MM. So he's in the closet, but he has this whole like, I'm the captain of an NHL hockey team. Like he's got this super like man whore, totally closeted, very, very closeted, very like toxically masculine type vibe to him. I mean, he's a really nice guy, but like he's just got that whole like, very stereotypical what you would imagine a hockey player to be like. So, I wanted to write his story, and so I started writing his prologue, and I really liked it. And so that was the other book that I wanted to do. And like the smart thing would be to write that book first, because then I could write it, and it's basically kind of standalone,
Right.
right? And it won't be as involved as the series, and I could probably write it fast. But then at the same time, like I really am ready to get to Hemlock Harbor. But also, too, my fear is that because that idea was so old, that like I feel like the closeted hockey player has been beat to death. You know what I mean?
But you know what?
So.
There's somebody told said the other day that there are no such thing as a new story. Like every story has been
Right.
told. It's just it's how it works into your interpretation of it. There's the dog in the background. It wouldn't be a podcast without Maggie in the background making noise. But it's always your interpretation of how you bring it into your world and your understanding. So, I'm a big one of if there's a story in your head that you need to tell, tell
Tell
it.
it.
Because otherwise, those characters become so loud in your head, you can't tell anybody else's story anyway.
Right,
So
that's true. And
there's
that's
that
kind of what I
element
think
of,
I'm waiting for.
I
I'm
want
waiting to
that.
see who wants to yell at me the most. And I
But
keep reading. I keep reading because I have like a prologue and a chat. Maybe I'll send you both of them and you just tell me what you think I should write.
okay. I'm not gonna
I'm
say
like
no
not even
to
joking. Like I'm not even joking. Like I think I'm just gonna send you. Or did I already? Did I do
that.
that?
I don't think so. Did you?
Well, I'm doing. No, I don't think I did. I think I'm gonna do that. I'm just gonna send you both books and you tell me which one I should write. Does that
Okay.
sound good?
Yes, it does. I love that. I am not
Because
turning that opportunity down. You got to be kidding me. No,
I
but
know
I.
that once I start my series, there's no going back. Like I can't, I wish I was a writer who could be like, I'm gonna write book one of this series and then I'm gonna write not Breakaway, but the hockey book, and then I'm gonna write the second book of the series. Like I can't do that. Like once I'm in the world, I am immersed in
You're
it and I
in there.
cannot come out of it. So unless like maybe with a co-write, I could do a co-write, which I really want to co-write with somebody, but I don't know who yet.
Okay, so that
Somebody
I'm going to
co-write
ask
with
that
me.
question because that was something I thought of is if you could co-write with anybody, do you
Oh.
have people in mind that you're like, I really want to co-write with this person? Or.
I mean, I do, but like, I don't know if it actually, like, I have like my like fantasy co-write, like not fantasy genre, but like who I would love to co-write with, but it will never in the thousand burning suns of the world ever happen
Okay.
would be like, I would probably just like give my left kidney to co-write with Tal Bauer. Like left kid, like I would be like, who needs a kidney? You,
Right.
everybody gets a kidney. If I can write with him, I'd be like the Oprah of kidneys to write with him. But that's never gonna happen. So I would love, I have a few people in mind that I would like to write with. I would love to write with any of the ladies that I worked with in this series. I think that like we kind of did in a way, and it just was so they were so good with because like it's more than just like matching writing styles. It's like, you know what I mean? You have to have a personality that matches too, because
Oh
Like
yeah.
I'm very like type A, and like and I need, I need really good communication, and I need, so I would need, it would need to be someone like that. But like I, yeah, any of those ladies, I would love to write with Riley or Christina or Saxon or any of them. Like it would be so fun. But like if I had to pick my dream,
Yeah.
duo, that would be that. Oh, I would love to write like a werewolf series with TJ Klune, but that's another thing that's never going to happen.
You
That's
know, it's never a bad thing to set some pie in the sky, ultimate goals, because if you don't set them, you're never going to get them. So there's nothing wrong with that. But, I have so much respect for authors who co-write, because writing is such a very personal thing. And there's so much depth to it, and there's a lot of ownership over the things that you write about. So
Yes.
co-writing with someone and having that collaboration and being able to work through things so that everything meshes and blends, and it doesn't seem like it's two different people writing two different stories and mushing them together. I love that co-writing option. I used to think it was weird. I'm like, how do you write with someone else? But I think you have to find someone you blend with. You have to find
Yes.
someone whose tone and style kind of matches what you do, that you have a comfort level with. And definitely do seem to have that already with the writers from Shenanigans, because
Right.
even though you wrote your own books, there was still that collaborative part of it, which is
Sorry, open my door.
incredible. No, you're right.
I had to let my dog out. I'm sorry for background noises.
That's fine. I'm sure everybody was hearing the background noise. My mom's visiting from Florida.
Oh,
So
fun.
she was supposed to come up on Thursday because we're going for our girls' weekend with me, my mom, and my sister up in
Oh,
Mohonk
that's
Mountain
right.
House. That's this weekend. And then she messaged me over the weekend and she said, "So there's a hurricane coming
Yeah,
to
this
the
big
area,
hurricane coming.
and I'm going to come up early." And I was like, "Good, just get the hell out of Dodge, come up here." But so now she was in the kitchen, like, just, I'm like, "What is going on in the kitchen?" And that's when Maggie started barking. And I'm like, "Oh, right, my mom is here." Because normally the spawns, one of the spawns is now awake. Is the other one awake now? Both spawns are now awake, but it's 2 in the afternoon. So at like, 1:15, when I heard noise in the kitchen, I'm like, "What? Oh, right. There's somebody else in the house with me." But anyway, getting talk about your brain squirrels. My mom's also a romance reader, which is funny because
Okay.
I never knew that. Like, my sister's been reading romance for a decade, and neither one of them clued me in.
That's so funny.
But anyway, so getting back to work. Yeah. So finding the oh my God, I don't even remember where we came from. Co-writing.
Yeah, co-writing. I feel like it's important to like you have to like exactly like you have to be able to mesh. You have to be able to mesh your personalities and your writing style, because I think the best co-writes are the ones that you can't tell who the author is.
Exactly.
I think when you can, like, unless like the characters are so opposite, like it could be fun to write like a really fun like opposites attract book with like someone who's completely opposite of a writer than you, but at the same time, like I don't think it comes down to the personality of the character more so than the style. And I feel like if the styles are so jarringly different, it doesn't
Yeah.
work, you know?
It doesn't, because you feel like you're jumping back and forth and it's just too much. The conflict is no longer in the story. The conflict is in trying to read it,
Right. And
because
it's
it's too
like,
much jumping. Yeah.
and what if you don't like the style of the one author versus,
Right.
you know what I mean? And it can get kind of jarring. I feel like, sorry, I'm going up and downstairs and I probably shouldn't because
That's okay.
I'm out of breath now. Because I'm chubby, but it's fine.
I'm a fluffy
So,
girl. I get it.
oh, you are like, I've seen you in real life. You are not. But, I feel like, Christina Lee and I have a very similar writing. I feel like Riley and I have the same sort of style. I think, and that doesn't mean like anybody else isn't like good or something. It just, I feel like our writing is kind of the same
Sure.
in a way. So,
Sure. You have to find who
and
you mesh with. That would
yeah.
be amazing.
And
It
I really
feels.
like, oh, go ahead.
It's funny. One of my favorite collaborations recently is Kaylee Loring and Connor Crace.
Oh,
And
okay.
I originally thought, I'm like, what? That's, huh? But oh my God. Yeah, it's just you find people you vibe with. And even though it might be somebody who you think is going to be completely opposite, I'm like, okay, this could be a train wreck. This could be really fantastic. And it turned out to be kind of like a fantastic, I don't want to call it a fantastic train wreck. It wasn't, but it was like the the ultimate gelling of what I liked from both of them, I guess, which Connor's a new writer, he's a narrator, but there definitely seems to be a difference in the books that Kaylee wrote on her own and the books they've written together.
Oh,
And
okay.
it's a good thing. It's not a bad
Okay.
thing, but it definitely could see, I could see when I was reading it that there were subtle changes and different things that happened. And I was like, huh, that's really interesting because you don't think about when you co-write with someone how that might influence or change the style
Your
of
own
what you
writing.
write and how everything goes together.
Right.
So.
And this is why, like, when I am writing, I generally try not to read within at least the trope that I'm writing, or because I don't ever want to accidentally pick up somebody else's like type of cadence or style. Like I will generally like read like so like mo most of the time when I'm really writing, I will read like listen I will listen to YA or something that's out of my genre. But I think sometimes, you know, I don't know. I'm sure what I'm trying to say. Like basically, like if I'm writing like a sports romance, I'm not going to read sports romances that while I'm writing that. And so, like when I was writing The Glow Up, I listened to Cole McCade's Over and Over Again, and which is like a super. If you haven't read that, you got to read that too. It's like so pretty. It's like one of the like most beautiful books I've ever read. As far
Okay,
as the writing
I'm
goes.
definitely taking notes.
It's like it's got quite an age gap, and he is definitely a purple prose writer, but I don't say that in a mean way. I say that in a good way because to me, purple is not bad. But I just loved his language so much. So like I knew that I was writing something a little bit more simplistic, right? So I knew I could listen to that. And I guess the whole point of that entire thing that I'm trying to say is that I feel like when you're writing with somebody, I could see how you could maybe start to pick up certain cadences or certain ways of saying things or turns of
Sure.
phrases. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I think
Oh, absolutely. And you do. And I
and
it's
grow from it.
you're not the only one who has told me that they don't read certain things while they're writing certain things because they feel like it messes with the flow that they've already had going.
Right. It can mess with what what you're doing, and I don't like to do that. So I try to not do
I
that.
don't blame you. I don't blame you at all. So we're like at an hour and 15 minutes. Gosh, it
I know,
doesn't
I
feel
saw
like
that.
that. It doesn't.
I
I just looked at
know.
the clock and I went, oh crap, I hope this is still recording. It says it is, so I'm gonna go with it. So
I'm so sorry. I'm so chatty.
we both are. It's all good. That's why I'm doing this. That's why we're doing this. So what's okay, so next for you in the writing world, you're working on those two things. I know we're gonna see you at Charm City in March.
Yes.
Are you doing any other signings between now and then?
Not between now and then. I'm doing a Polycon, but I don't know
Okay.
if that's before or after Charm City. Oh, I'm
No, I
doing
think that's
GRL.
after.
Duh. I'm gonna be at GRL in next month.
Oh, okay. That's right. Yes, I remember you posting about that.
So I will be at GRL next month, and then I think Charm City's after that, and then I think a Polycon, and then I don't know if I'm allowed to say, but I think it's fine. I'm
Go
gonna
for
be
it.
in Indies. I'm gonna be at Indies next year.
Yes.
So yeah, I'm super excited for that. So yeah, and I think that's it. There is this one thing that's this new book convention thingy that's gonna be in Anaheim that I was invited
Okay.
to, but I haven't decided if I want to go yet because
Ooh,
after
yeah.
Allure was a love was lovely. It was a lovely time, but it's like I kind of been promising myself that I wasn't gonna go anywhere that I have to fly.
Okay.
So I don't want
That's a
my
lot.
dog to eat. It is a lot. It's because you have to ship your books and you have to ship your swag, and it's just a lot. And then I don't know. I don't know if I'm going to do that one not yet. But if I do, that one is in August of next year. But I think I'll probably just do GRL, Charm City, and a Polycon,
That would be
and
amazing. And
Philly,
maybe.
and that's
Wow.
plenty. That's
That's
plenty.
a lot.
It
That's a
is a
lot
lot.
because you also need time to write. You have a family. There's all these things going on in your world. Overscheduling is a thing that
It
some of us
is
suffer from.
100%.
So,
And my goal
sometimes
is,
when,
oh, go ahead.
I was going to say, sometimes when you can look at it and say, yeah, no, I'm not going to do that because it's just too much, that's an amazing recognition, too.
And that's and like I really want to. I'm going down to like per diem is what it's called. One day a week at my job, and because I really want to try to do this full time writing. I would love
Sure.
to write full time. And that's like, I don't know if that's something that people know, that I have had a full time job this whole time. And it's hard to keep up with like the releases of everybody and everything. So I'd like to try. I don't think I'll ever be like able to rapid release like some authors do. I'm just too slow. But I would love to do 3 to 4 books a year. That would be my goal.
That's a
So
good
we'll see.
goal. That is a good
Yeah.
goal. And you have to write within your comfort zone. If you rush something, it's not going to be what you want it to be to begin with. And it's
Right.
not going to be what your readers are used to. I know there's been several authors recently who have put up these apologies that they have to delay the release of their book. And I'm like, dude, I would so much rather you delay the release of your book and get it where you want it to be to put it out there than feel you have to rush to get something out there to accommodate readers.
Right.
Authors don't owe us anything other than to give us a book that we're going to love. And if that takes a year, then it takes a damn year, you know?
Right,
And
right. And that's what I have to keep. Go ahead.
not saying that I will love every book that everybody writes, but
No.
I would much rather an author delay a release to put out what they really want to put out, because the likelihood of me enjoying it then is going to be much higher than if they felt like they were rushed and stressed, because that comes through in the writing.
Right. No, 100%. And when I say this, I don't want it to sound like I'm like saying anything bad about people who rapid release, because there are
Of
people
course
who can
not.
rapid release and
Right.
they write amazing books. But for me, I know my process and my craft is that if I were to rush it, you would not get quality. So I feel like for me in my practice, it is quality over quantity every time. So
I'm
I agree with
so
you
there with you.
wholeheartedly that, and I feel like I think readers, and when I say this again, this is not me shaming readers by any means, but I think readers have sort of become accustomed to the trends of the market, right? And so they want what they want, and they want it when they want it. And I understand that because I'm a reader too. You know what I mean? Like, I don't want to wait a year for that fantasy book that I've been waiting for, for the traditionally published. I'm so used to getting the books that I want now. And then, you switch over to traditional publishing and it's like, that book will come out in 2025. And you're like,
What?
ah! You know what I mean? 'Cause, and that's how it used to be. And so really, I feel like self-publishing has sort of trained their readers to be a different way. And so I feel like that's why authors feel like they need to apologize, is because the readers now have expectations that they didn't used to have,
Yeah,
And so
you're
that it's
absolutely right there. I agree
yeah.
with you 100%. And for me as a reader, it's like, okay, you don't have another book coming out for 6 months. That gives me opportunity to read all of these other authors. So,
Right,
you
right.
know, there's so many great authors out there that I would never have found if I was constantly reading the same author
Author,
over and
right.
over and over again. So,
There's
I'm
enough, exactly. There's so many of us. There's like, you know what I mean? I always say there's enough pie for everyone. And I think if we just slow down and chew our food a little bit, we can have all the pie we want. You know what I mean?
Because you know what? Someone will always make more pie.
Right. Always. There's always going to be more pie.
Yes, I'm on the Dean
Like,
Winchester train. I need pie. I love pie. But you
oh,
know, there's always going to be somebody else is always going to make more pie. So you're
right.
right. I love that. There's
Yeah.
enough pie
Yeah.
for everybody.
There's enough time. And that's what I always say. Like, whenever I start to feel like, because I mean, as an author, you see everybody else's achievements on Instagram and Facebook, and if you're not there yet, or if you are there, or whatever, like wherever you are at your journey, it's so hard and so easy at the same time to sort of doubt yourself and say, oh, I'm not doing this like they are, or I'm not doing that like this. And it's so easy to kind of sort of fall, pull into other people's lanes that you don't need to be pulling into. And so I think at the end of the day, because we are all in, I mean, when I say this, like heavy finger quotation marks right now, are we competing with each other? Sure. But not really, because at the end of the day, there's enough pie for everyone. Like, one reader isn't going to only read, Max Monroe for the rest of their life. You know what I mean? Like, they're going to want to read something else, So, we are in a way, like, if we were releasing the same week, okay, sure, maybe we're, competing a little bit. But at the end of the day, they're still going to buy both those books. They might not read mine first, but they're still going to buy it, maybe, hopefully.
And what
But,
I
like, you
love,
know, like, but so that's kind of how I have to think of it. Like, I have to think of it in that way where, because if I start to pull out of my lane, it can get really depressing. So I think it's important for us to stay in our own lanes.
I agree. And I think, you know, you talk about the, you're in competition with each other, but you're really not.
Right.
There's an element also of this collaboration. And, you know, you are one author that I read and that I love. And because you did a collaboration with seven other authors are gaining a reader. You know, you could have said, well, they're all writing the same thing I am. So we're in competition with each other and I need to not write in their world because I need to focus on me. And that's damaging because, you know, how many people are going to read the other, came in because of you and are going to read the seven others, or came in because of Saxon and are going to read the seven others?
Yeah. Right. I've never had the numbers that I've had this past week. And that has nothing to do with me. I mean, maybe it has nothing to do with me. Like, I have gained so many new readers because of this, and I'm so grateful for it because they you know, each author brings their own audience to this, you know, and, you know, and we all are gaining all these new readers, and it's so awesome because because all we really want to do is tell stories. We want people to read them, right? At the end of the day, that's the whole goal. And so I think that if we can just think of it that way, so that's why I really wish that, I think for the most part, 99% of the time, we are all a community.
Yes.
Sometimes our community gets a little, you know.
Yes. As every community can.
Sometimes we get off track as a community. But I think for the most part, I don't know too many businesses where we're all selling the same thing that are so kind. You know what I mean? You know, we all try to share the review. You know, we all try to share each other's releases. We all try to get into each other's groups. And I just think it's awesome.
Yep. And that is one of the things that has drawn me to it and kept me in it is this element of we're sharing everything we love about this with all the people we possibly can. And I find at least in the last 2 years, the first 6 months, everything I read was pretty much a Kindle recommendation or something else. But everything since has been something that was recommended to me by someone else, another author, another reader, a review that I saw, a collaboration, because I've said this on other podcasts too, is of rising tide floats all boats.
Right.
And, you know, the only thing that's going to keep you from rising with the rest is your own anchor. So if you anchor yourself and tether yourself to a concept of, I'm going to sit in my space and only in my space, and I don't want anybody else in my space. Well, that's okay. You're the one who's not going to go anywhere when everybody else is floating up. And
100%.
I love that element of Romancelandia, that authors are in other authors groups. There's multi-author groups, the events, the book events where authors are collaborating with each other. And I got to tell you, one of the things that has been really heartwarming to me, and then I got to let you go. I know it's like an hour and a half, but
I know,
thank
sorry.
You. But no, it's all me. One of the things that I have loved in the Charm City Romanticon group, the attendee group, is when the authors, you guys are fangirling each other.
Right.
Posts, you know, like posting reviews about someone else's book that you read, or how much you loved this one character, or how excited you were to see someone else. And I saw it in the group for Allure. I'm seeing it in the group for Shameless. You know, the other groups where there are authors who are also readers who are fangirling other authors. And it's just like that to me is the entire beautiful concept of this element of community.
Yes.
And that just makes my heart just soar because that is exactly what I was hoping for, looking for, and what I've found in the romance novel community is this sense of pure joy for someone else's success.
Right.
When the glow up hit, I took a screenshot of it. I posted it when the glow up hit 69. In the Kindle store.
I know, I saw that. That was awesome.
That's just
I loved it.
I'm such a 12-year-old boy sometimes. But I had to because it was too perfect. And that was so amazing to see those numbers come in.
Yeah.
With that release because I love it. I love
Thank
the
you.
Book. I love the writing. I love the characters. You know, I love you. I fangirl you hard. And when I saw those numbers come in, Julie and I back and forth. What is it now? What is it now? What is it now? Julie Collier and I do that a lot.
Yeah. Yes, I know. I know. I was going to say, she was like, I always like, there's these readers that I always call them the OG because like they've been around since like, you know, the still life days. And she's definitely one of them.
Oh yeah. Yep. Julie knows all the things. She's amazing. So, oh, wow. Okay. So, 1 hour and 25 minutes.
I know.
Thank
Okay, I'm sorry.
you. Was there, and no, anything else that you wanted to say before I let you go so you can keep doing the things you're doing?
I don't think so. I think I'm good. Just read my books.
Yes, read all the books. So I will
Read all
post
books.
with this all kinds of links.
And
And
thank you. And also thank you for even having me. Sorry. Oh my God. I get so stupid sometimes, I swear. So thank you for having me. I love doing things like this
you're
and they're
welcome.
fun. And I appreciate you thinking of me to even do a podcast. So I'm just like, yay.
I'm so excited. And if you've listened to any of the others, you know that we just kind of ramble and talk
Yeah.
and
I love
discuss all the things. And somebody said recently, it's like being in my living room listening to me talk to people. And it's like, yeah, that's kind of exactly what I want it to be. It's a conversation that's fun and free flowing. And that's just it. So thank you. Thank you. Thank you so much. I will see you in March. If I don't
Yeah.
see you before then, somewhere else, I'll see you online.
Yes, for sure.
But
And I'm going
thank
to
you
send
so
you those two
much.
things. I'm sending you those two things.
Yes,
Be
please
prepared.
do.
Okay.
I want them. Give me,
All
give
right.
me, give me. Okay.
All
Thanks,
right. Talk
Amanda.
to
Take
you.
care.
Bye. Thank
Bye.
you. Bye.
Sure.
So that is it for today, bookworms. Thank you again so much for joining me and for joining Amanda. Amanda, thank you for joining me. This was really great. I hope that you found something within what we talked about that resonated with you and that you'll pop into the comments on this episode on Facebook or the Instagram page. This is episode 14, Book Chat, and let me know what you think. What did you think about what we talked about? What resonated with you? If you're looking for Amanda on Facebook, you can find her in her group, AJ's Crew. You can also find her as AM Johnson on Facebook and Instagram and TikTok. And you'll find me on Facebook, Brazen Bookworm's Unrighteous Reading Rebellion, on Instagram, TikTok as Brazen Bookworm, on Discord. Remember, gosh, lots of ums today because we talked a lot. Brazen Bookworm. And if you don't feel comfortable leaving a comment, you can always send me a message. You can DM me through Facebook or Instagram. You can email me, brazenbookworm@gmail.com. You can find all the links at direct.me/brazenbookwormblog. And until next time, happy reading.